Bettering your business takes working with the best. With the James Hardie Alliance, you gain access to leads, training, networking, and support from the number one brand of siding in North America. Achieve new levels of success by joining the James Hardie Alliance today.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains May 2nd through the 12th. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Main thing that unifies Democrats at this point is hatred of Donald Trump, and they would elect a toaster if they had to. There's something fraudulent about her. I can't think of anyone else who's this much of a cipher.
I call myself a joyful warrior.
There's a way that the media discusses electoral politics in the United States. It's racist, and I am sick of it. The big story of this election is what happens afterwards.
Hello, I'm Fraser Myers, and I'm delighted to be joined in discussion with the brilliant Lionel Shriver. Lionel, for those of you who don't know, is a prolific and amazing novelist. Her latest novel is called Mania. It's absolutely fantastic. Lionel, you're joining me down the line from New York. I've been wanting to talk to you for a while about the US election that is in a couple of weeks from when we're recording this. You've often described yourself as a double hater, as someone who hates both the candidates and parties with an almost equal venom. Do you still see yourself that way coming into this election?
I'm afraid that sensation has become only more intense. One might expect on the Democratic side, the exasperation to have abated somewhat once we got rid of a geriatric, demented candidate. And replaced him with someone who technically is in her right mind. But actually, I don't know what it is. I've really struggled to put my finger on it, but there's something about Kamala Harris that makes me despise her even more than Joe Biden. Mm. The closest I've come to identifying it is there's something centrally fraudulent about her. You know, she doesn't ring true and she never has. I don't believe she has any convictions of any kind. They are purely convictions of opportunity. So that's what made it so easy for her to flip on any number of very important issues. These are not casual, you know, what's her favorite color kinds of issues. And the idea of having such an empty suit in the White House is anathema to me. I tend to find that I've got more energy, negative energy, loathing, on the Democratic side, partly because, you know, the American media is saturated with nastiness about Donald Trump, yeah. Right? There's nothing duller than talking about what's wrong with Donald Trump, what kind of a terrible character he has, how he's going to destroy American democracy, and he's going to become a dictator. And it just puts me to sleep. So that, you know, we don't need more people trashing his character. So I just leave that aside. I mean, I'm not quite sure that he is the threat to democracy that everyone claims. We've already survived 4 years of his presidency. I think that hyperbole is getting tired. To take that one offhand remark about how he'd be a dictator on day one, literally, as the Democrats have done, you know, taking the ball and run with it, is a little silly. So he doesn't terrify me so much on that. You know, I'm more concerned about his incompetence than what the Democrats are afraid of is his competence, right? That is, he will take over all the branches of government, presumably get the army behind him, and subvert our entire republic, and make himself presumably president for life, which for someone who's already 78 and lives on hamburgers isn't very long.
Do you think, I mean, would it be hyperbolic to call someone like Harris a threat to democracy if we are, you know, if this election is the most important? Elon Musk has made this claim that actually, you know, democracy ends after we elect Harris, you know, or is that just the flip side of the hysteria?
Oh, well, I would say that's also the flip side of the hysteria. I mean, I just think talking in such extreme terms doesn't help anyone. Mm. Although, you know, point taken, the way that Kamala Harris ended up becoming the nominee was anything but democratic. She was chosen by a handful of democratic honchos and imposed on the electorate. And, you know, she was and on top of that, she's a terrible choice. And had she had to go through the primary process, she would never have been chosen. So it is completely anti-democratic. And it's been kind of creepy to watch the way the democratic electorate has simply got on board, regardless of her deficiencies. And they just took what they were handed. And that's because the main thing that unifies Democrats at this point is hatred of Donald Trump, and they would elect a toaster if they had to.
Yeah, and there is almost, and also in the media as well, is acting a little bit like Pravda. I mean, it's one thing to, I can understand why people would dislike Donald Trump, don't get me wrong, but then to actively endorse and lavish praise on Kamala Harris, it just seems utterly bizarre to me. Are people lying to themselves when they're doing this, do you think?
I mean, in terms of the competition between these two candidates, it's also, they are competing with incompetence, right? It's not only Donald Trump, who really doesn't have the wherewithal to take over the government, not to mention the entire country. Kamala Harris doesn't have the wherewithal to do anything either. And it is now just taken as a given, even among a lot of Democrats, off camera, that she is sufficiently out of her depth that she would just do what she's told by this shadowy cabal that we just assume has actually been running the government ever since Joe Biden was elected. Because, of course, Biden's incompetence, I mean, there's a reason that word keeps coming up, started at, you know, even before he was elected. He was not quite in his right mind. And I just, this whole spectacle has been a great international embarrassment. You know, you could hardly come up with a selection of people who were less qualified to, quote, lead the free world. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not really keen on that designation anyway. But still, you know, the United States remains a powerful country, and you don't want it in the hands of people who don't know what they're doing and don't even know what they want to do. And that's definitely the problem with Kamala Harris. At least, you know, Trump has an agenda. Mm. People are afraid of it, but he does want to deport millions of people. You know, for example, that you can cite that policy. But Kamala Harris has a smattering of a few, you know, economic freebies that the U.S. can't afford. That's about all she's come up with. And there's no sense that why she wants to be president. You know, what is it that drives her? Aside from, I think she enjoys the attention. Mm. You know, it's fun. And she gets to wear lots of different colored pantsuits. Honestly, she has the worst dress sense of anyone who's ever run for president. But beyond that kind of superficial being the woman of the hour, people, you know, fawning over her. Beyond that, I don't sense she's driven by anything. I don't sense she wants to achieve anything politically in a meaningful sense.
I don't know if you saw the day we were recording this. She released her platform for Black Americans and included a number of quite eye-catching proposals, including, as you suggested just then, some economic freebies, some quite substantial loans that would be forgiven by the government, but also legalizing the sale of marijuana, backing cryptocurrencies. I don't know why this is specifically a black male phenomenon. But also there is the sense, I think, that Harris and the Democratic campaign seem to be losing a bit of ground with some of their traditional constituencies. The identity politics seems to be going into overdrive in order to not lose, you know, some of those people, ethnic minority voters, for instance, who they could rely upon. Are you getting that sense?
Yeah, I mean, this is where we touch on what has become an overpowering irritation for me. There's a way that the media routinely discusses electoral politics in the United States that I have come to resent, not just as a member of the white majority, but on behalf of minority groups. We are constantly being instructed that we have to think about the electorate as chunks of homogenous groups of races, and the support of every candidate is constantly being reported as, you know, this proportion of the black vote and this proportion of the Hispanic vote and this proportion of the white vote. And then it's cut up a little bit more so that sometimes it's black women and black men, right? We're focused on that right now. Occasionally, we'll look at whether people are college educated or not. But for the most part, it'll be white people who are college educated, white people who are not. So this is all fake, right? This is not the way the electorate actually is subdivided. And yes, there are black men who support Trump, and they might have their political reasons, and it may not have anything to do with being black, right? It's as if what completely dictates people's vote is their membership of these groups. And I think this is, I don't think it's true. I think it is, it's also a way of reporting that tries to reinforce a way of thinking, tries to reinforce the idea that if you're Hispanic, then of course you have to vote for Kamala Harris because that Hispanics vote for Democrats. It's racist, if you don't mind my pointing it out. It's a racist way of thinking about electoral politics. And I am sick of it. And I don't like the way that the media is so attached to this way of thinking that they're basically holding the actual electorate back. They are forcing people back into boxes. And so that I'm supposed to vote with white people, right? And I'm supposed to vote with white women. You know, I think that this way of thinking and this way of reporting the news and reporting the polls is actually evil. And it's socially regressive.
Yeah, definitely. Another thing that's been floating around in the news is there are these accusations that Kamala Harris has plagiarized parts of her autobiography. She'd been accused.
Yes, from Wikipedia of all places.
And she'd been accused in the past of cribbing a Martin Luther King anecdote as her own as well. I mean, at the very least, I don't know how serious we want to take these. Seriously, we need to take these accusations, but it does suggest that she's pretty insubstantial, or has at least not had an original thought ever.
Oh yeah, that's just a sign that. The thing is that she's constantly being put in positions, and that plagiarism is a good example, where, you know, you don't have to come up with much, mm-hmm. right? I mean, famously now asked if she might have done something different in if she were president in the Biden administration. She says, no. She could have, you know, she's been present at so many different decisions. And, you know, if she had real thoughts, like her own opinions, you would have to assume that being present for coming up on 4 years of many, many different political decisions in which, you know, she's not in control. She hasn't been able to make policy herself. So she's been in the back seat. You would think that she would remember, you know, there were any number of times I was sitting there thinking, you know, that's not a good idea, or I wouldn't do it that way, or, you know, this is not going to work out well, or this bill is too much money. We shouldn't be spending that much money, whatever. You would think that over the course of the entire administration, she would have thoughts, right? She would have a few opinions that differed with what actually happened. But no, she can't think of any because she doesn't have any opinions. I can't think of anyone else in public life who's this much of a cipher.
Moving on to Donald Trump. Have you noticed any particular differences between this current campaign and 2016? It feels as if 2016, he didn't necessarily have, you know, he had the nomination, but he didn't really have the party apparatus behind him. He certainly didn't have many media backers. Whereas now it feels like there's Elon Musk behind him. There's a few other strange characters jumping on board the Trump train. Does that make any difference for you?
Well, no, because they can't control what he actually says. The biggest difference between this campaign and 2016 and even 2020, he's going nuts. You know, the stuff he says is often just crazy. And, you know, these rambling rallies he gives where he talks for at least a couple of hours and it's just associative off the top of his head.
Yeah.
I mean, at least I will give him this much. He is capable of filling time with words in a way that Kamala Harris is not. If you take away her script, she just babbles. So he's got that on her. But beyond that, the stuff he says lately is noticeably goofy. In fact, it's so goofy that I can't cite examples off the top of my head because they don't connect with anything, like with any political issue. They're just nutty things he says. And, you know, I'm not a doctor, but this doesn't seem like someone who's completely in his right mind. I mean, it really does seem demented to me.
Do you think with J.D. Vance now in the picture, of course, a lot of the media is saying, well, now here we go. Here's the real threat to democracy. Forget Trump. Vance is the real fascist threat. Do you find him a bit more, I guess, interesting at the very least as a prospective leader than Trump?
I actually find him pretty impressive. I do not think he is a fascist threat to democracy. I think that in order to be on the Trump ticket, he has to stick by the stop the steal relationship to the 2020 result. You simply cannot be Trump's running mate in this election and say Trump lost in 2020. It wouldn't work. That would have been an absolute condition of coming on the ticket.
Yeah.
And in kind, he can't commit 100% to backing the result of 2024. That's also basically a condition of his being on the ticket. Now, I think he's uncomfortable with it. That's just me, but I see him being uncomfortable with it and not always dealing with it very well because of that discomfort. It's he's very well spoken, which is a relief in context, right? He's the only politician on the two tickets who can talk. And I think he's pretty smart, which is also a relief. He's not demented and he's intelligent. You know, he's got this pro-family thing. It's a very standard conservative, you know, go marriage, go children. Doesn't bother me. It's kind of standard. And the truth is that the Republican Party desperately needs candidates that offer it a future. Trump is old. Whether or not he gets on the gets the presidency, he can only have it for another 4 years. So Vance is offering Republicans a sense of a future of there will be leadership after Trump. And I think the Republicans could do worse. I don't think he's radical. I don't think he's out to, necessarily pass an abortion ban for the whole country. The Democrats are constantly trying to pin that on Republicans, but I don't think there's appetite for that. So he doesn't scare me. I think he scares Democrats mostly because he's lucid and bright, and that's intimidating for them. Especially, Trump is such an easy target. He's so easy to take down. He wears his flaws on his sleeve. Whereas I think J.D. Vance is more formidable. He also comes from, a genuinely working class background. And of course, Brits know how often that people are constantly claiming to have a working class background, and it's actually rubbish. And in his case, he's from Appalachia. You can't get more working class than that. And he's, he's a genuine self-made man, and there are not many of those left in the United States either. So his biography is very attractive. And Democrats, this is all anathema to Democrats. And I know they're trying to push him as, even worse than Trump. His very competence is threatening because he'll actually be able to do all these terrible things. But I think what's truly threatening is that he's a pretty good candidate.
And Tim Walz, I imagine you're not impressed by him.
Well, no. I hope you've seen Saturday Night Live lately. They've just eviscerated him. I think that he is an indictment of Kamala Harris because she had her pick of any number of pretty impressive governors, most of all Josh Shapiro. If you've seen him speak, he is impressive. He's coherent. He can also speak well. He would have been the most sensible pick because, of course, he's governor of the most important swing state, Pennsylvania. And she skipped him. And the reason that she skipped him, it seems pretty obvious to me, is that he was too impressive. And therefore, she was uncomfortable with him. She was comfortable with Walz because he's kind of a putz. And he's not going to overshadow her. He's going to be like a little doggy following along. And that's exactly what he's been. In fact, he's turned out to be more flawed than they realized because, for example, inconveniently, he's a liar. To borrow from the Trump vocabulary, he's sad. And he does not help her electorally in any sense. And I don't find it encouraging either that if she were to be elected, then you know, anything happens to her, he becomes president. Oh, great. I mean, it's less of an issue because she's younger, but you never know, and you don't want to have a vice president who would make an appalling president.
Yeah.
And I think he would be an appalling president.
Okay, final question. Say, come after election night, the results are in. Which side do you think would be the sorest losers of the two?
Well, of course, one instinctively wants to say Trump. He has told us, basically, that he's going to be a sore loser, especially since he was a sore loser last time.
Yeah.
But I think we underestimate what could happen on the Democratic side if they lose, especially if it's close.
Mm.
The Democrats have form in claiming that the results of elections are illegitimate. Hillary Clinton thought that Trump was elected in 2016 only because of Russian interference.
Yeah.
Stacey Abrams, in the gubernatorial race in Georgia, she still claimed she won that one, and that was illegitimate. There are any number of examples of the Democrats claiming that this is a big cheat and the results are wrong, and there's some explanation other than the will of the people for the wrong person winning. And also, the left has plenty of form when it comes to political violence. I mean, if you look at what happened after the George Floyd killing in 2020, that went on for 4 months. It caused billions of dollars worth of commercial and domestic damage. And the arson was awful. It killed dozens of people under advertised. So, you know, when the left doesn't get its way, they can be pretty scary. So I'm not saying there's nothing to be concerned about on the right, but I think it may be a toss up who could be worse. And in some ways, the big story of this election is not so much going to be the day of the election and who wins, but what happens afterwards.
Mm.
And I can't say, and nobody else can either. But there's almost a feeling like there's a gauntlet been thrown down to both sides, that, you know, you are almost expected not to accept the results and to make a big stink about it. And the question is, who's scarier, and what does that stink constitute? What are you expected to do? Mm-hmm. How many neighborhoods are you expected to burn down? Now, what public buildings are you expected to assault? It's very concerning. And I hope we're disappointed.
Yeah.
That the best result is whoever wins, the other side just doesn't rise to the occasion, right? And everyone, you know, the media is poised for all this rioting and it sort of just doesn't happen. All the energy had been used up before the election, and everyone's tired and stays home. And that's what I want to happen. I want to have nothing to write about in my spectator column.
Lionel Shriver, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Here at Ritual, we know that a mother's support isn't limited to one day a year, and we believe that yours shouldn't be either. So this Mother's Day, we're honoring the world's biggest supporters with science-backed daily rituals that center you not just today, but every day. Whether you're thinking about motherhood, actively trying, or already there, we've got you covered for when it matters most. From fertility support and natal choline to our best-selling clinically backed prenatal multivitamin, know that you're getting clean, traceable key ingredients in bioavailable forms. Because let's be honest, you don't have time for guesswork. Find your ritual. Go to ritual.com/podcast and for a limited time, get 40% off your first month. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Based on net sales from industry data, including Nielsen IQ, Stackline, and Numerator as of Q4 2024 in top 5 products. At Ritual, we're celebrating all moms this Mother's Day, current and aspiring. So whether you're looking for fertility support, natal choline, or our best-selling clinically backed prenatal, we've got you covered. Find your ritual. Go to ritual.com/podcast and for a limited time, get 40% off your first month. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Based on net sales from industry data, including Nielsen IQ, Stackline, and Numerator as of Q4 2024 in top 5 products.